Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. For those of you that are watching our podcast, you might notice we're in a different set, and that is because we are. We are in a new studio. It's the Vietcetera studio on Nguyen Huệ Walking Street. So thank you for all of your support and making the studio happen over the last couple years. Our first guest also has the very lucky opportunity to be our first guest in the studio, Chi Thao. She has been a friend for couple years, maybe longer, I can't remember exactly, but I've known her for a long time, mostly because of her organization that she founded, AVLD. I'll let her explain what that means in a little bit. So let's jump straight into it. Chi Thao, welcome to the new studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be the first guest in this beautiful new studio. Before we start our conversation, Hao, I would like to invite you and also all of our viewers and listeners to do a quick breathing exercise.
Okay.
So would you like to do that?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, science research shows that if we basically slow down and also our thoughts, the quality of our thinking actually improves. So I'd invite everybody listening and watching to close your eyes and basically follow my counting. So breathing in, one, two, three, hold, one, two, three, four, five, six, out, two, three, four, five, six. We'll do this one more time, breathing in, one, two, three, hold, two, three, four, five, six, out, two, three, four, five, six. And now I'd like you to take three very deep breaths. And then, Hao, whenever you're ready, let me know.
I'm breathing right now, by the way, folks, if you're listening in. One more. Okay.
All right.
Actually, well, thank you for that breathing exercise introduction. My mom actually shared with me a few months ago the same, because I've had some trouble sleeping recently. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned a combination of factors that have contributed to that. Eating, my diet, basically, some stress that has been both personal and professional. And managing that takes a lot more than just your thinking and what you're doing, but even something as simple as this.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'd love to hear why you wanted to start with that, Chi Thao.
Yeah. So, you know, I have a company that does leadership development work, executive coaching, and I work with CEOs and C-level people all across the world, Asia, Australia, US, Europe, big companies, Fortune 500 type of companies. And I have found that there are some common challenges. It doesn't matter whether you're a CEO or you are a graduate that just started, you know, at Vietcetera. There's a lot of challenges in people's lives. They have a lack of peace. They have health challenges. They have depression. I've talked to, I have a client whose salary alone before his bonus is $1 million. Okay. And he has deep anxiety and panic attacks. Okay. And you wouldn't know this. Youth suicide rate in Vietnam is increasing. Depression is increasing a lot. And this is not just a Vietnam issue or, you know, a US issue. People are experiencing a lack of purpose and fulfillment. And the work that I'm doing at the moment, there's a beautiful quote from the CEO of Audi in Spain, Javier Platerville, and he said, leadership today is about unlearning management and relearning being human. So we go to MBAs, we learn management, we learn these techniques, and yet our people are not feeling fulfilled, right? We don't have a sense of peace. And so often in this life, it is so transactional. It's so fast paced, and we're doing things, but we don't even know why we're doing it. So this academy that I'm launching, specifically starting off for Vietnam, is called Relearn. Relearn human, purpose, and legacy. So we have to return back, you know, what does it mean to be human? We're all going to die, right? So therefore, the time that we're born to the time that we die, what is our purpose? And when we leave this earth, what is our legacy? And so, you know, when I'm doing my coaching or these extensive leadership programs, I always start my classes and even the one-on-one coaching work with the breathing, because it creates a space, even if it's just like 1 minute, it's a space for us to pause and to create a distance between our life and our to-do list and actually just being human. Hmm.
What spurred all of this? I mean, did you have your own kind of anxiety issues and you were looking for solutions to that?
Wow, I love that you asked that question, because I experienced depression. You know, I've experienced like very severe mental health challenges, you know, and this is the first time I'm actually going to share this in a public forum, but I've also at one point contemplated suicide. Okay. Now, you know, I've been very privileged to be, you know, a CEO, work in private equity, you know, as a chief strategy officer for a $5 billion fund that was looking after, you know, chief strategy officer of Vietnam, Cambodia. I've been an international corporate lawyer. I've, you know, been invited to meet Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, all of these things. And people would never know that I had experienced depression. And at one point I had contemplated like suicide. And so, you know, I grew up in Australia in extreme poverty. And my family struggled a lot. And I worked as a factory worker during law school. I got 100% scholarship to go to law school at Australia's oldest university. And I was, you know, delivering pizza. I was the only female delivery driver in many districts, delivering in the most statistically robbed street in Sydney. And at one point, I had to contemplate being a sex worker. My family was in extreme debt, and, you know, I felt the responsibility as a Vietnamese child, you know, and all of the pressures with our culture. And so life was extremely hard, and I felt that I had to just make money and make my parents proud and make them comfortable. So I became a corporate lawyer and, you know, did all of that. And at the height of my career, I felt that actually, why am I doing all of this? And I felt a lack of purpose. I felt a lack of fulfillment. I had some health challenges, right? I ended up in emergency hospital, and I had a lot of severe health challenges, which was the big warning that life was giving me, like, you need to turn in a different direction. And I think, like, if we deeply listen to ourselves, there's a lot of signals that indicate what is the right path. But we don't listen to ourselves. We listen to influences, we listen to, you know, other people, but we don't actually listen to our own voice. And I think the defining experience for me that really led me to live this particular, like, path, which I feel is living my purpose. You know, my husband and I were pregnant with our first child, a girl, baby Angie. Mike him, and close to 7 months, we found out that she was likely going to die and she was not going to make it. So the doctors said that basically if she was to be born, she would never live above 12 months. My husband and I made the decision to keep going. It was during that time that was the most important and transformational experience that has changed my life. And Angie is a miracle baby because that's what she did for my husband and I. And during that time, in our deep suffering, you know, every day I had an ultrasound. So we bought an ultrasound, and every day Tony had to scan me to see whether Angie was still alive. So during this time, we really tried to understand, what is the purpose of suffering? Why is this happening? And we found that the purpose of suffering is to deepen our compassion, to make us human again, to understand that we are not the only ones that suffer, right? And so we suffer so that we are a bridge to reduce other people's suffering in some way. We started a daily gratitude practice. So every day, Tony and I, before we went to sleep, we had to talk about what were we grateful for in that day, even though we knew that our baby was going to die, pretty much. And we started thinking, okay, why are we waiting until she dies? Why don't we celebrate each day she's alive? And it's a different approach. And so we set up Baby Angie's Register of Kindness and inspired family and friends to do an act of kindness for a stranger for each day that she's alive. So we had 400 acts of kindness at the end of her life. We had trees planted in Bangladesh. We had debts forgiven in Cambodia. We had heart surgeries funded in Vietnam. And grandma, so Bang Wai, my, you know, mother said, this little girl has lived a life more meaningful than people who are 80. So at 7 months, she passed away, and I went through 20 hours of labor to give birth to her. And we did a ceremony, and we printed it out, all the acts of kindness, and we put it in balloons, and we let that go. And, you know, that experience really changed my life, my husband's life, changed our marriage. You know, I learned to love him unconditionally again, which I had forgotten to do because I was fueled by fear, you know, fear of so many different things. And so this, you know, all of the different things that I've learned throughout my whole life, I have now decided, you know, for the past several years to put it into these leadership programs, you know. And in our conversation, just before this talk, just before we started, I asked you, what is a good leader? You know, because how you're growing an amazing company, and you know, every company has challenges, and you're saying that, you know, it's hard to find a good leader. And I said, well, what is a good leader? You know, and when I think people answer that question, a lot of the times they answer in management skills. And management skills is very different to leadership skills. And there's an amazing, you know, John Chambers, he was the CEO of Cisco for many, many years. And this man, his main anchor for his leadership style was compassion. And after they did major acquisitions and you know, mergers, a lot of the times after you acquire a company, the leadership teams don't stay beyond their sort of claws, right? But for him, under Cisco, the team stayed, like 70% of them stayed for a very long time. And it wasn't about management. It was about real leadership. And it was about returning to being human, returning to compassion, returning to how do you enable people to live their purpose in your organization. And with that, you need to have a clarity of your own purpose and what are those values, and live in a life that has real integrity, so that the person that you are at work is also the person that you are outside of it, and that inspires people to give their best and to live their best life.
Thank you for sharing that story. And I had heard from you over the years, you know, bits and pieces of that, and to share this now is you know, very grateful for the opportunity just to listen and to share to our listeners as well. During that time, I mean, you must have had several people that you could go to. I mean, aside from friends and family, did you ever, work with anybody? Or I think there's a bit of, stigma against working with someone too, either for professional reasons or personal. Actually, my own, and I actually haven't shared this either. I've always been a bit more of a pragmatic person, I guess you could say, almost to the point where people say it's almost too pragmatic.
Yep.
And that's very true. I think I know that, I'm aware of it, but I haven't had necessarily exercises to that I've done myself or worked with somebody else. So I actually did work with somebody recently, not like a personal leadership coach or anything. I actually worked with a psychologist.
Right.
It was, I think I never thought I would, but one of my friends, he runs a company called Geo Health and here in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, where do I go to start even, a bit of a plug for Geo Health? Where do I even go to find someone that could help me with this? And it was through them that I met this. I've been meeting him maybe about once every 4 weeks, just to chat about the issues I've been going through, mostly professional, but some personal as well. And he even said, I asked him, like, he was going through what various kind of like states people have when it comes to going through opportunities and challenges. And one of them was being delusional. I know that sounds very weird, but he said a lot of leaders are a bit delusional in the sense that they keep going despite the odds, or in a good way when I say delusional, or but also in a negative way, because sometimes they believe in themselves too much that they can't see what's around them. It's kind of blinders kind of thing, right? So I asked him, do you think I'm delusional? He said, no, I think you're okay, Hal, but it's good to look around you sometimes.
Yeah.
And get reference points and all that. So anyways, sorry, my long-winded question is, during your time, did you have to, work with anybody, talk to people that you didn't think you would talk to about these challenges you were going through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, especially in our culture, the words for mental health, right? Now, growing up in Australia in a very Vietnamese household, my parents would say, tam tang or kum or, so this idea that, okay, mental means, mental health is like crazy, whereas we don't see it the same way as physical health, right? So if you have a symptom, you see a doctor, don't you? We go and see a doctor. And if we want to get better in terms of our physical health, we have a personal trainer. Right? I want to build strong back muscles. I would go to get a personal trainer. But it's exactly the same as mental health, right? We have to seek experts to assist us in all the non-physical aspects in our life. So absolutely, I have seen, a psychotherapist for about, a year. During a time when I was a CEO, it was extremely stressful. Working for a private wealth fund. I had to close down a company. I had to fire 40 people at one go. It was really, really tough. So I sought a psychologist who I found in Vietnam, and then she moved to the US, and I continued to work with her for a few years. And also, as I was growing, I have so many fears, and I think a lot of us do have fears and wounds. I had marriage trouble, and I came to her first because I said, I think I want a divorce. And so she had a session with me, and she said, look, I think it may be true that you're not compatible with Tony. It may be that true. However, I think the thing is, if you don't address your own wounds and if you don't heal and become whole and you find someone else, you'll take those issues to that person too, right? And so started the journey of really working on my own wholeness, becoming, getting to a place of full empowerment and not operating from a place of lack of self-worth, fear, scarcity. And then that changed my marriage completely, you know, without actually trying to address like my issues in the marriage. So we've grown, you know, so much. Tony has also, you know, sought a counselor as well. And right now in my own work, I have my own coach. Okay, so I see him probably once a month. And because, you know, I'm continuing to evolve, and for me to be the most powerful self, I also need to ensure that I continue to have good health, right? Because I also still have blind spots. I also have still things that I need to work on, right? Just like our maintenance of our physical health. If you stop going to the gym, you stop doing exercises, then you're going to suffer as a result. So I, in order for me to be very impactful in the work that I do, I have to ensure that I have a professional who supports me in my journey in life.
Well, the work that you do and the people, especially now, and myself and most of our listeners too, are leaders of companies, small and big. And for them to seek this advice, it's a bit easier for them. You know, they probably have the means, they have the real need. Maybe it's for them to overcome that stigma to then initiate it. But even for our younger listeners and watchers today, what are some of your recommendations? You know, they don't necessarily have the means to, or maybe not the immediate need as well. Their challenges are a bit different. What advice do you have to share to our younger listeners when it comes to these kind of questions?
And I think that's sort of what's inspired me to create Relearn Academy. You know, we're going to be launching that in the future, but if people want to go to our website, you know, relearnacademy.com, they can just sort of put down their details, because, you know, we want to create this sort of really accessible online content, all the way from, you know, online content sort of to more, I guess, higher value type of products, which is online communities, and then to actual physical retreats, you know, for C-level and women executives, you know, and physical leadership retreats. So we want to be able to have a range of different products that can be accessible to different groups. So, you know, with the online courses, it's targeted, you know, at our younger audiences who want to ask and answer, what is a life of purpose? What is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of my life, right? How do I actually think about the legacy that I want to leave? So, you know, when we think about legacy, we think, okay, you're 80 years old, or you've now built a big empire, and now I'm going to think about what am I going to leave for this planet? But I want young people to start thinking about their legacy now, you know. So there's, you know, a lot of different content, books, you know, out there. But I also think something specifically that is Vietnamese, you know, that addresses our cultural context is not really there. Because I think that young people in Vietnam right now are experiencing a lot of challenges. It's exciting. There's a lot of opportunities. They can see role models for startups and so forth, but it's also extremely hard because they are caught now in an intersection of, okay, what does it mean to Da Hieu, right, for my family? Do I listen to everything that they say? What about my own needs? What about, you know, doing things that maybe seem selfish to my parents, right? I want maybe to pursue creative arts or creative industries, but actually, you know, I don't have a lot of money and I need to look after and send money back to, you know, Da Vinh, right? I want to be Western, but I also want to be Vietnamese. Like, there's a lot of challenges here as Vietnamese young people negotiate their sense of identity, their sense of place, and their sense of purpose and meaning. you know, which is why it's inspired us to sort of create this Relearn Academy for the future.
Cool. Very, very good. On Vietcetera, we have a couple shows and content. I couldn't say there's one very specific addressing mental health. Maybe there will be in the future. Mm. But we've noticed, particularly the last 2 years, there's been a surge of interest in mental health, especially when it's distributed through our social, but even our old articles, we're getting search results where young people or anyone really, they're looking for that advice, and there quite isn't that central hub, let alone community for this kind of content. So let's see how that rolls out. And even on our end, more content to come on that kind of topic. You know, that reminds me of a story actually recently I heard. It apparently made the news. I didn't read it, but I heard about it. There was a student at Hanoi Amsterdam High School who recently committed suicide as a result of the pressures related to, you know, test results.
Yep.
Making sure that this person, I don't know them, would, you know, have a job or have university kind of entrance after. And I'm sure their families invested a lot into them. And that triggered a bit of a response in that community to discuss more about having a healthy mind when it comes to that. But also on the parent side, how to manage that for kids. I think it's not just kids seeking advice, but also parents understanding where in the modern day, kind of what young people are going through. And what do you have to comment about that? Especially, people think it's like people always seeking help, but sometimes it's, in this case, the parents also being understanding of that.
Yeah. Well, what's really interesting is, you know, so I grew up in Australia. I was just recently in Australia last month, and a friend of mine is a counselor at a very elite private school, and there's a lot more Vietnamese skilled migrants and business migrants that have gone overseas, right, in the last 5 years. So, you know, to Canada, to Australia, to the US, and they're sending their kids to these private schools. And my friend reached out to me because she said that one of the Vietnamese students at this very expensive private school is showing signs of extreme stress. And they interviewed the child, and she's not sleeping, right? She's actually, her mental cognition, her IQ tests were off the charts. So they said, this is a genius child, but actually her exam results are really poor. So they thought it was an academic issue, but then they did a sort of test, and they found that she's a genius type of child. So then they're like, what's going on? So she physically is showing signs of extreme stress. This little girl is 11 years old, 11. And they interviewed the parents. Parents are educated people, right? They're business migrants, they're skilled migrants. And the extreme pressures that we have from Vietnam, we have brought it around the world. So the parents are saying, you have to go to after-school tutoring. So after school, you have to, you know, help them, like, thang, you know, li, all this stuff, English, etc. And then you have to do other tests to go into this other elite school. And there's no time to actually just be, no time to be human, no time to be an 11-year-old. Right. And so for this parent and many people, what is the equation that we have set up to equal success? So we say high test scores equals success. That is the equation that we've set up. And what is the root cause of that? So, you know, I talked to my father, and he said that, look, you know, there's Confucius times, and in the Confucius times, you know, colonization for 1,000 years, education is the most important, then it's agriculture, then it's tradespeople, then it's craftspeople, and then it's trades, so then it's business. And then we got colonized by the French, and so in order to actually have a very good position, you have to study, right? So we don't understand that how this study for the sake of study has become in our Vietnamese DNA, and is it relevant anymore? Now, fast forward, my friends from university days, they got the top scores for year 12, the top scores. Now, anxiety, 2 years off from work, not being able to have a job. The idea that the equation that we have set up is high test scores equals guarantee of success is no longer the actual formula. in this particular world. And so when the counselor talked to the parents and did an intervention, it actually didn't work because the parents still had this formula in their heads. You have to become a doctor. So the mother asked the counselor, can this school get my daughter into medicine? Now, this girl is 11 years old, right? But we also see exactly the same things that's happening in Vietnam, right? And so this all comes down to what are the equations that we have set up and for a belief and a formula of success, because high test scores equal success, but success equals money. Success equals money. This is the equation that must be disrupted, because it is the same equation that has led to a mindset of selfishness, to destroying the planet, to climate change, to gender inequality, to income inequality. It's the same formula. And each of us has a responsibility, especially as leaders or as parents, or particularly, you know, being part of different communities, we have to disrupt these formulas for not only the fulfillment and health of our own family and mental health and physical health, but also for our communities and our country and the planet.
I would say Vietnam has a special capacity to make that change though, as well, especially, I mean, if you compare it to other Asian countries, for instance, that are a little further ahead in terms of economic development. You can take China, Korea, Japan, and those places to this day, they have huge issues with young people being under pressure with, you know, education, test scores, jobs. Jobs in those places are super competitive, and there's in some cases not enough jobs. Vietnam is this unique position where it's a little bit opposite. A lot of job openings, but not enough quite yet. There's that age gap, I guess you could say. But at the same time, I would say the education system, while it's, you know, trending in that, you said, you know, formulaic sense, getting a job is quite fluid here. At the same time, at least in my experience, for office jobs and white collar jobs. So there is that opportunity for Vietnam to make that change now. And it requires not just from the student perspective, but also from parents and other stakeholders, education system, perhaps. Let's see how that'll evolve over the coming years. For the companies that you're working with, Jitao, maybe you can share about like what those company profiles are and maybe if any success stories, you know, not just companies, but maybe individuals, and you don't have to name names, but maybe you can share how that process
Yeah, so look, I think I'm working with companies, you know, from FMCG, you know, Fortune 500, like companies, to finance, professional services. And in some of my extensive like leadership programs, like there's one program that's 8 months, and they select only, you know, around like 16, you know, to 20 people in the company out of a staff of like 10,000 to participate in this program that I designed and run. And, you know, when they start with the program, the programs that I run are not just about the mind, okay? Because I feel that, you know, with knowledge, it doesn't necessarily shift behavior, right? I mean, like go read a book and that guarantees you doesn't necessarily that's going to translate into your behavior change and decisions and life changes. So I believe that there has to be a connection between your mind, your heart, and then your will to make a difference and change. So a lot of my programs is around shifting your heart, right? Opening your heart up to look deeply into, you know, the things, the fears that you have, the shames that you carry, and addressing that so that you can become more effective at work. And the byproduct of that is that people's lives actually really change. So they still work for the same company, but at the end of the program, they say that I am healed. I don't have any more shame. So the way that I lead is completely different. I don't lead from defensiveness. I don't lead from what will people think of me? If I do this, what will people say? They don't lead from I have to be a perfectionist, right? If I make a tiny mistake, it means that, you know, I don't have self-worth. It means that I'm not working 100 hours a week because I have respect for myself and love for myself. So, you know, I have an executive said that I started this program liking myself, but I ended it loving myself. And the implication of that is greater confidence, better judgment, trust with their teams, and, you know, even with job offers from their people who are poaching their teams, the teams don't go, even doubling the salary. And the teams then say, I will walk off a cliff for you. And that is an amazing impact. And then also, you know, sitting with having dinner with one of my students and their kids and the spouse, the 11-year-old daughter said to me, before you came into my dad's life, he was closed. He was like a ball like this. And she held up her fist that's closed. And she said, after the program, he was like this. And she opened up her hands and she started crying. And his wife said to me, you know, he's so different. He's loving, he's tender, you know, he has patience. And and you know, what started out as a program for a company has benefited, you know, his relationships with his own family, his own parents, and so much more broader. So then when they graduate, they always say, I can't believe this is at work. I can't believe that this is a work program because this is such a humanizing, life-changing program. And this can be work. Our workplaces can be a place where we can really be fulfilled, live with purpose, and leave a legacy. And, you know, I end the programs sort of always asking my participants, how do you want to be remembered at this organization? What, on the last day that you are with this company, what do you think and hope people will say about you? And they're never writing about, oh, he closed the deal of $12 million. It was like, he inspired me. He made me confident. I felt I couldn't fail with his presence. You know, he believed in me.
That reminds me of, I went through one of your programs for the listeners to just get some context, through the AVLD program, Australia, Vietnam Leadership Dialogue. For those of you that do have a connection to Vietnam and Australia, or either, check it out, AVLD. I mean, this dialogue that you started, just to shift gears a little bit, from the outside, I remember discovering it a few years ago through some friends, mutual friends. It seemed like a great dialogue to gather, you know, these future or current leaders between the two countries to start that dialogue, that partnership. And a little plug for the Australia-Vietnam relationship. It's evolved a lot since then. I'm sure this program has been one of the drivers for that, strategically, economically, among others. And, you know, to my surprise, I didn't know when I was applying that actually most of the program was based on what you're discussing today. A lot of, not just a leadership dialogue talking about like trade and investment and whatever. It was much more than that. It was about personal development, understanding your leadership capacities and you know, what your limitations are as well. So that was super valuable. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit. AVLD, like what was, again, to shift gears a little bit, what was your inspiration behind that? And maybe you can talk about the program itself and why you integrated so much of these leadership development programs into it.
Thank you. So I started this with two others. So I'm a co-founder. So Rachel Bowie and Kai Ngo were the other two co-founders, and I became the founding board chair of the organization. We all have, all three of us had refugee backgrounds, right, from the war. And you know, the relationship with Vietnam and Australia, but also say Vietnam and the US, it has legacies, but it's also evolving and changing. And we found that there there was no Australia-Vietnam young leadership dialogue. There were programs with China, Indonesia, Japan, a lot of these countries, but nothing, you know, with Australia and Vietnam. So we decided to establish it. And we wanted to, at the beginning, we wanted to focus specifically on young people, highly influential people and future leaders and current leaders who are under 35. And we wanted to shape their journey so that they can think about their leadership story in a different way, you know, to challenge them to think more in a socially responsive way, thinking about the prosperity of both countries, and helping them to remind themselves that they have a duty, you know, to themselves and their communities as well. And so, you know, when we created this, we didn't want like a conference with like 100 people, which is all of the other types. We wanted 10 people from Vietnam, 10 people from Australia, highly, highly selective. And so we have amazing alumni. If you go onto the website, Australia-Vietnam Leadership Dialogue, so it's australiavietnam.org. You can see the incredible list of alumni from all different sectors, social enterprise, you know, sports, et cetera. But I think, you know, what I wanted to ensure, as you experience how, is that it's not just an intellectual journey, right? We're not just bringing these people together to meet with the Minister of Trade, which you did as well, and ambassadors. That's very important. But it's also about opening your heart, right? How do you question your own legacy, right? At this stage, as young people, 30, 34, what is the type of legacy that you want to leave on this planet, right? And that helps inform you as you craft your journey for the next 40 years, you know, to have a lighthouse, the lighthouse to shine a light on, am I going on the right path? You know, am I building that legacy that I have thought about at this dialogue? You know, and maybe some of you have thought about it only for the first time. Right? Because we don't have a habit of thinking about our legacy as young people, right? We think about that as, you know, older people that are cashed up and, okay, now I'm going to do philanthropy, right? But for me, the question of leadership is this beautiful quote by John Powell, and it's not how do we get there, it's how do we live. It's how do we live, and that is the core of leadership. And so I wanted to sort of integrate that into this this program.
Very cool. Well, I was one of the lucky kind of delegates, I think, last year for this program. Highly recommend it. So avld.org, I think.
AustraliaVietnam.org.
Okay, there we go. search it online and you guys can find it as well. Awesome. Chi Thao, that kind of worked toward the near at the end of our podcast today. I'd like to just leave an open space for you to share any final comments to our listeners and watchers today. Anything else they should know about what you're doing, about the topics we talked about, Relearn Academy. Any final words you'd like to share?
My final words is be you. Be you. And I think your journey towards purpose and living with purpose is to discover what being you really means. Mm-hmm. I had a person who came to me and said, you know, I feel lost. I look at you and I want to be you, you know, in 5 years' time or 10 years' time. And I said, I don't want that at all. I want you to be you. And so Relearn Academy is about relearning being human, relearning your purpose, right, and your legacy. And it doesn't matter how old or young you are, it's important to start thinking about this from a very, very early time. So relearnacademy.com, go onto the website. And at the moment, it's just to put your name and your email, and we'll let you know when our programs are ready.
Okay, great. Well, in the meantime, guys, you can always, of course, listen to this episode, refer back to the discussion we had today. Start with breathing exercises. I think that's a good start. Chi Thao, thank you for coming to the studio, our brand new studio, and being our first guest. It'll be hopefully a memorable one for our listeners, and we'll hope to invite you back onto our programs in the future.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And congratulations, Hao, and all the team for doing an amazing, amazing work, important work with Vietcetera.
Thank you so much. Office House marries German quality with functional design, resulting in a future-proof concept blending sustainability, passion, and international standards. Inspired by Bauhaus design and the minimalist Office House, is the modern-day answer to a burgeoning city's and Gen Z's needs. A modern, efficient, inspirational space that helps attract and retain sharp workforces while increasing productivity and efficiency, thereby reducing operational expenses. Office House, the perfect solution for your modern office needs. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.